I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today I'm going to share with you an interview on Press TV about Bush and Blair being accused of war crimes by a court in Malaysia. It's one of the few positive events in a world gone mad since 9/11. But first, I want to read parts of a recent article posted on Washington's blog and on LouRockwell.com about how 9/11 was falsely used to justify the U.S. invasion of Iraq. The title is, U.S. Officials Guilty of War Crimes for Using 9/11 as a False Justification for the Iraq War, by George Washington. And here goes. U.S. officials created a false link between Iraq and 9/11. 5 hours after the 9/11 attacks, Donald Rumsfeld said, my interest is to hit Saddam. He also said, go massive, sweep it all up, things related and not. And at 2:40 p.m. on September 11th, in a memorandum of discussions between top administration officials, several lines below the statement, quote, judge whether good enough to hit SH, that is Saddam Hussein, at this time, unquote. In other words, top officials knew that there wasn't a good case that Hussein was behind 9/11, but they wanted to use the 9/11 attacks as an excuse to justify war with Iraq anyway. Moreover, 10 days after the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, President Bush was told in a highly classified briefing that the U.S. intelligence community had no evidence linking the Iraqi regime of Saddam Hussein to the 9/11 attacks and that there was scant credible evidence that Iraq had any significant collaborative ties with al-Qaeda. In a Defense Intelligence Terrorism Summary issued in February of 2002 by the United States Defense Intelligence Agency, cast significant doubt on the possibility of a Saddam Hussein al-Qaeda conspiracy. And yet Bush, Cheney, and other top administration officials claimed repeatedly for years that Saddam was behind 9/11. Indeed, Bush administration officials apparently swore in a lawsuit that Saddam was behind 9/11. And moreover, President Bush's March 18, 2003 letter to Congress authorizing the use of force against Iraq includes the following paragraph. Acting pursuant to the Constitution and Public Law 107-243 is consistent with the United States and other countries continuing to take the necessary actions against international terrorists and terrorist organizations, including those nations, organizations, or persons who planned, authorized, committed, or aided the terrorist attacks that occurred on September 11, 2001. Therefore, the Bush administration expressly justified the Iraq war to Congress by representing that Iraq planned, authorized, committed, or aided the 9/11 attacks. Cheney made the false linkage between Iraq and 9/11 on many occasions. When NBC's Tim Russert asked him about a poll showing that 69% of Americans believed Saddam Hussein had been involved in 9/11, Cheney replied, "It's not surprising that people make that connection." And even after the 9/11 Commission debunked any connection, Cheney said that the evidence is overwhelming that al-Qaeda had a relationship with Saddam Hussein's regime. Again, the Bush administration expressly justified the Iraq war by representing that Iraq planned, authorized, committed, or aided the 9/11 attacks. On December 16, 2005, Bush admitted, quote, there was no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the attack of 9/11, unquote. However, Bush and Cheney continued to frequently invoke 9/11 as justification for the Iraq war. Cheney finally admitted in 2009 that there was no link. The administration's false claims about Saddam and 9/11 helped convince a large portion of the American public to support the invasion of Iraq. Indeed, the false claims about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction probably would not have gained traction if it wasn't for the anti-Arab hysteria after September 11th. And the government policy of torture would not have been tolerated if we weren't misled into thinking that Saddam and al-Qaeda had formed an unholy, all-powerful alliance on 9/11 and had to be stopped at any cost. Thus, the Saddam 9/11 deception was a necessary precursor to the administration's weapons of mass destruction lies and torture policies. And 2006 polls showed that almost 90% of the troops in Iraq are under the mistaken belief that the U.S. mission in that country is, quote, to retaliate for Saddam's role in the 9/11 attacks, unquote. In other words, our kids are fighting and dying because of this lie. If you want to read the rest of that article, do a search for Washington's blog. So Bush and Blair and their associates took us to war in Iraq based on lies about Iraq's connection to Al-Qaeda and 9/11, and then used the WMD lies to further promote the war. While you're listening to the interview about Bush and Blair being found guilty of war crimes, keep the following statistics in mind. More than 1 million Iraqis have been killed. 4 million have been displaced. There are 33,184 wounded U.S. soldiers. There are 4,488 dead U.S. soldiers. 320,000 vets have brain injuries. And according to the January 2012 article posted on PolitiFact.com, quote, before this day is out, 18 more veterans will have taken their own lives, Representative Rush Holt said in a December press release. That is the daily average. It is intolerable, and it has to stop. That would mean that 126 veterans every week, or 6,570 every year across the nation. As shocking as that might seem, Holt's statistic is accurate. So, all of this damage and destruction was based on lies, and the Obama administration has let them get away with it, which I believe makes them complicit in the war crimes. And now let's listen to that interview between Press TV's Susan Medeiros and Professor Francis Boyle.
September 11th, 2001. The U.S. is under attack. The American response to the 9/11 attacks was quick. In a matter of 1 month, the U.S. attacked Afghanistan. The administration labeled the attack as the beginning of war on terror.
At this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger.
The next stage was the invasion of Iraq in March 2003. The military attack was conducted despite large-scale anti-war protests around the world. American and British officials, as the main architects of the war, ignored these massive protests and proceeded with their plan. From very early on, politicians and international criminal law experts questioned the legality of the invasion and occupation of Iraq. More than a decade later, the question remains whether the invasion of Iraq was an instance of war crime and a breach of international treaties, and whether the architects of the war should be held accountable for the killing and torture of hundreds of thousands of civilians. To find out more, I sat down with Professor Francis Boyle, who teaches international law at the University of Illinois. He has been vocal in different international podiums against the war crimes, which he believes were committed by the former U.S. President George W. Bush and former British Prime Minister Tony Blair. Professor Boyle, thank you so much for joining us. I guess my first question is, how does international criminal law define the concept of war crime?
Well, obviously it's very technical issue. In our proceedings in Malaysia, our twofold proceedings, the first against Bush and Blair for a Nuremberg crime against peace for their war of aggression against Iraq, and that those proceedings went on for a good 2 days of argumentation to present our case before we won. And then the second set of proceedings against Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Ashcroft, and their lawyers for torture of Arab, Muslim, Asian men in Guantanamo, Iraq, and Afghanistan. That took 5 days to go through all the evidence and the legal argumentation. Today, you can see a succinct statement of war crimes in the Rome Statute for the International Criminal Court. But of course, that's not all of them. And in addition, when that Rome Statute was drawn up, the United States Ambassador Schefter went in there and did damage control, damage limitation, to significantly reduce the amount and extent of coverage. So the ICC statute would be a good place to start, but that's not the end of the matter.
And so how significant were the Nuremberg trials in establishing the principles of international law regarding war and genocide and so forth? And did they eventually begin a process that led to the formation of the ICC?
Of course. Without Nuremberg, that was the idea of the United States, we would not have the International Criminal Court today, and we would not have most of the laws of war, war crimes that we see today. And again, just to show you the current utility in Malaysia to prosecute Bush and Blair for a war of aggression against Iraq and get them convicted, the heart of our case was the Nuremberg Charter judgment and principles. Their guilt for a crime against peace is unassailable.
I hope people in the world will take notice, and they should actually ostracize these people. These are basically murderers, and they kill on a large scale. That is, a person who murders one person should be hanged. By the murder, a person who caused the death of so many people should be honored. This is actually not in keeping with our ideas about civilization.
According to the Nuremberg Principle, Principle 4, war crime is defined as planning, preparation, initiation, or waging a war of aggression or a war in violation of international treaties, agreements, or assurances. Based on this definition, can the U.S. and U.K.-led war of Iraq in 2003 be considered an instance of a war crime?
Yes, that's exactly what we argued in Malaysia for Bush and Blair. We got them both convicted of a Nuremberg crime against peace. And you'll note, just last week, Archbishop Desmond Tutu has publicly stated on the basis of our Malaysian verdict that both Bush and Blair should be prosecuted in The Hague. And we are making efforts now to do this. We tried to get Bush in Switzerland, but his lawyers advised him not to go to Switzerland. I've tried three times to get Bush in Canada, but unfortunately the Canadian government protected Bush. So we'll keep after Bush and Blair for sure for crimes against peace, war crimes, and torture in general, certainly for Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Ashcroft, and the rest of them, for torture. So we have these verdicts now in Malaysia. They're the first verdicts given anywhere in the world against these individuals. I know your correspondent, Press TV, Lauren Booth, was there. She did very extensive reporting of these proceedings, and we have a whole team of lawyers there in Malaysia and internationally, and we will go after them.
For the second time, the Kuala Lumpur Foundation to Criminalize War is putting a former head of state and their administration before a people's court to face charges of torture and war crimes. Now, if Bush and Cheney are similarly found guilty the end of this week, the question will arise, which US organization will have the nerve and the power to try the same thing?
You know, the wheels of justice might turn slowly, but they do turn. And I feel confident that at some point we'll be seeing Bush and Blair in the dock somewhere. If I don't get them, some other lawyer will get them.
Also based on the Nuremberg Tribunal, murder or ill treatment of prisoners of war or persons on the sea, killing of hostages, plunder of public or private property, wanton destruction of cities, towns, or villages, or devastation not justified by military necessity are also crimes against humanity. Now, given their role in authorizing torture at Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo, Can the U.S.-led officials within the Bush administration who were responsible for these tortures be charged with crimes against humanity? And is complicity in such acts a breach of the Geneva Convention?
Yes, this was the second round of proceedings in Malaysia that just concluded mid-May, where the thrust of that indictment, there were two charges, first Bush and Blair crime against peace, and the second Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Ashcroft, and their lawyers for torture and war crimes. And that was more extensive. It took us 5 days of argumentation on both sides. And we made most extensive use. I was one of the co-prosecutors of the Nuremberg Charter judgment principles, the Geneva Conventions that prohibit torture, and the Convention Against Torture. So we did get a unanimous guilty verdict on all charges, and we will continue to pursue these individuals and get them incarcerated somewhere.
How important was the principle of starting a war of aggression or crime against peace in the proceedings at Nuremberg? And was this the crime that led to the hanging of many leading generals, Nazi generals, at that time?
Right. Well, Nuremberg was the idea of the United States government. We have to understand that. Stalin wanted to take out the top 50,000 Nazi leaders and shoot them. Churchill wanted to take out the top 5,000 and shoot them. Roosevelt felt that, well, what would be the difference then between us and them? That there should be a trial with due process of law. Now, in the framing of the charges, however, it was felt that the most serious was a crime against peace, because it waging a war of aggression entailed within itself all of the other war crimes and crimes against humanity that come from it. And that is why we started with Bush and Blair for waging a war of aggression, a Nuremberg crime against peace against Iraq. That had to be established right off the top of the bat. That was the most serious. And then, not to minimize any of the human suffering at all involved, but then in the second charge, to deal with torture and war crimes and crimes against humanity.
So why haven't the initiators of this war, both in the U.S. and U.K. administration, why haven't they been brought in front of any judiciary inquiry so far?
Once again, the United States government, under the legal advisor Harold Coe, pretty much gutted the capability of the International Criminal Court to prosecute Nuremberg crimes against peace or aggression. So it was gutted by Coe. But as for war crimes and crimes against humanity, yes. As a matter of fact, I filed a complaint in 2010 against Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Ashcroft, Tenet, Condoleezza Rice, and some of their lawyers for crimes against humanity for the what they call extraordinary rendition, which is really a policy of enforced disappearances of human beings and their torture, which, when this policy becomes widespread or systematic, and it is both, becomes a crime against humanity. That complaint is still pending, my complaint against Bush and the rest of them, at the International Criminal Court. My complaint was the first ever to survive so far at the court, because the United States government is not a party to the Rome Statute. And I figured out the conundrum: how do you hold the highest level officials of the United States government accountable when the United States is not a party to the Rome Statute? It wasn't easy to do that, but I did it, which is why my complaint is still alive. Up until my complaint, every other complaint had been rejected on those grounds. I guess we'll have to see. There's a new ICC prosecutor, Madam Bensouda. I don't know what she'll do with the complaint. But we did take then the Malaysian proceedings, the verdicts on both, and all our evidence, which is over there, and file it with the International Criminal Court against these individuals. And every state in the world has jurisdiction to prosecute these individuals. So if they travel out of the United States of America for any reason, they'll be just like Pinochet. There's not an entire army of lawyers chasing after them now. They're closing in on Blair over in the UK. You see the reaction to Tutu and his statement there. Bush, as I said, he was going to go to Switzerland, and a Swiss parliamentarian demanded he be prosecuted if he showed up on the basis of my complaint. That got back to Bush. He didn't show up. So, you know, we'll keep after them. Mm-hmm. What can I say?
And what factors may prevent the prosecution of war criminals? I guess my question is, are heads of state important in this regard?
Sure. It's all political. I mean, look at the ICC prosecution so far. All they've done is go after African thugs from Africa. They have not gone after American criminals, British criminals, Israeli criminals. I advise President Abbas to accept the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court, which he did, and the previous prosecutor, Moreno Ocampo, just copped out, saying, well, I don't know if Palestine is a state or not. Palestine was just admitted to UNESCO. How can you deny it being a state? It's ridiculous. It was purely political. So he rejected the complaint by the Palestinians, and he rejected the complaint against Tony Blair on Iraq. He did not reject my complaint. He gave it off to his successor. So it shows you the politics being played there at the International Criminal Court, that so far they're just going after black thugs from Africa and not dealing with these wholesale mass murderers and criminals from the United States, Britain, and Israel. Look what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. And Moreno Ocampo refused to lift one finger to help them. Right now, Israel is inflicting outright genocide on the Palestinians in Gaza. And in Malaysia, I advised Dr. Mahathir, I felt our next step should be Palestine. So there will be hearings in November in Malaysia on this, and I've agreed to go back for that. I know the Palestinians have always been close to Dr. Mahathir's heart, and I suspect he will move heaven and earth to help them.
Their property has been taken with no compensation, and they have been rooted out of their country. But the Palestinians have tried to fight back. Unfortunately, they have not had the support and the help of the people who are of their own kind.
How significant was the destruction of the Warsaw Ghetto in 1943 and the formation of law concerning war crimes and crimes against humanity?
Look at Fallujah. I've written an article on this. The wanton devastation. It's right there in the Nuremberg Charter under the definition of war crime. And it says quite clearly, the wanton devastation of cities, towns, and villages is a Nuremberg war crime. And I've argued that with what the United States under Bush did to Fallujah. They just blew Fallujah away. Or what Israel did in Gaza, just murdered 1,400 for the most part, completely innocent Palestinians in Gaza.
In both word and deed, we have been unwavering in our support of Israel's security. And it is precisely because of our commitment to Israel's long-term security.
So if the ICC hasn't prosecuted George Bush and Tony Blair for starting an illegal war or being responsible for committing quote-unquote war crimes and crimes against humanity in Iraq, can the ICC charge them with any breaches of international law?
It would have to be genocide, war crimes, or crimes against humanity, not general breaches of international law. For that, you'd have to go to the International Court of Justice, the World Court, which is also in The Hague. And that is what I've recommended Iran do, the Islamic Republic of Iran do now, to prevent an attack upon Iran by the United States, Britain, France, and Israel. And I would hope Iran would give serious consideration to this proposal.
And finally, the United States and its Western allies have been beating the drums of war against Iran, similar to the way they were doing in Iraq. My final question is, do you see any significant policy change in the Obama administration to that of his predecessor, George W. Bush?
As of now, I regret to say the answer is no, despite the speech he gave in Cairo that was promising. But we're seeing, in 10 days, massive naval maneuvers by the United States and NATO states right there in the Strait of Hormuz, right there up against Iranian territorial waters, which Iran has rightly said we are prepared to defend our territorial waters, and they have a right to do this. The Strait of Hormuz is not an international strait or waterway that anyone can just sail through Iranian territorial waters. As you know, there are two channels, one in and one out. In goes through Iranian territorial waters. And if Iran wants to shut that down, they can. The channel on the way out goes through the territorial waters of the UAE. Iran cannot shut that down. But right now, the U.S. and the NATO states and Israel are all using this as a pretext to bludgeon Iran to do their will. And my concern 10 days from now, when you have these massive naval maneuvers on both sides, something could get out of hand, or there could be a deliberate provocation by the United States and Britain, which has happened before, as you know, in the Gulf, along the lines of the Tonkin Gulf Resolution. And we could have very serious hostilities between the United States and the Islamic Republic within the next 10 days. And so it would be my advice to the Islamic Republic that we sue at the World Court immediately against the United States, Britain, France, Israel, for a temporary restraining order against these governments, and to stop these maneuvers and these threats that could lead to general warfare between the United States and Iran and the NATO states. So this is a very dangerous, serious situation, and even assuming, and this is a deliberate provocation by the United States, that Iran must understand it as such. And my advice would be, your lawyers in The Hague, Iran's lawyers in The Hague, have my proposal on how to do these lawsuits. And my best advice is we file them right away and try to restrain these hostile, provocative military maneuvers right off the Strait of Hormuz.
And again, you've been listening to an interview between Susan Medeiros of Press TV and Professor Francis Boyle. You can listen to the interview again or read the transcript by going to the website presstv.com. It was taped on October 12, 2012. And now here's what Desmond Tutu said about Bush and Blair. The immorality of the U.S. and Great Britain to invade Iraq in 2003, premised on the lie that Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction, has destabilized and polarized the world to a greater extent than any other conflict in history. In a consistent world, those responsible for this suffering and loss of life should be treading the same path as some of their African and Asian peers who have been made to answer for their actions in The Hague. You can read all about the lawsuit and verdict against Bush and Blair at the website criminalizewar.org. And again, that's criminalizewar.org. It's the website for the organization, the Kuala Lumpur Foundation to Criminalize War. We can only hope that these war criminals who have caused so much death and destruction will be brought to justice. But in the meantime, let's hope that the guilty verdict in the War Crimes Tribunal in Kuala Lumpur will deter other leaders from committing similar war crimes. Obama should be worried about his surge in Afghanistan and the drone attacks over Pakistan. And certainly any attack on Iran would qualify as a war crime. It can't be easy being a war criminal these days. Code Pink tried to arrest Condoleezza Rice near the Republican convention in Tampa this past summer. A Canadian citizen tried to arrest Bush when he went there. And I found this interesting website while doing research for the show. It's called arrestblair.org. And it says arrest Blair for crimes against peace. So it's this website dedicated to his arrest. And it says this site offers a reward to people attempting a peaceful citizen's arrest of the former British Prime Minister Tony Blair for crimes against peace. And you can donate money to the site. And they also are asking people to let them know about Blair's schedule if they know where he's going to be so they can try to arrest him. So interesting website. Again, arrestblair.org. And on a final note, an independent investigation into the evidence of 9/11 would end the wars and put many war criminals behind bars. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.